using soil, and only with air and water.
We decided to prepare a biological mulch and place it on the soil so that it does not produce pollution during wind erosion.
Mulch is actually a cover that sits on the surface of soil and sand and sticks to it tightly, preventing particles from being suspended in the air when the wind blows.
The event serves as a significant milestone with dedicated students working together to cultivate a vibrant and future-oriented technology sector, encouraging innovation and fostering a new generation of inventors in the field.
The goal of hosting this event is to identify and nurture exceptional talents while fostering students' innovative projects and ideas. This initiative aims to empower students to develop their skills, showcase their creative potential, and contribute to the advancement of cutting-edge fields. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Trials, Tribulations of a Believer. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab. So I'm talking to you today about trials and tribulations, and I'm going to look at the lives of a couple of our prophets in particular to just sort of draw some lessons from them. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Prophet Ayyub, Ayyub first, because as you probably remember that, so basically what happened was Prophet Ayyub basically had everything. He was well-liked, he was wealthy, he had a wonderful family, and his practice, his worship was of the highest order. He did nothing wrong. He was totally submissive to Allah, a wonderful servant. And you know, obviously the shaitan just wasn't too happy. Shaitan couldn't quite believe. And shaitan basically asked of Allah to get permission to sort of be able to sort of change or sort of some of the conditions, the life conditions of Prophet Ayyub, because basically Shaitan thought, no, this cannot be. I can deviate him away from this immense faith he had. So Allah did not give him permission to sort of go for the Prophet's heart. That was untouchable, basically. He was also infallible. But so the Shaitan tried. So Shaitan tried by taking away all his wealth. Had no impact. The Prophet continued his amazing worship. The Shaitan tried by taking away the children. He lost all the children. Made no difference. The Shaitan took his wife away. Made no difference. And then the last stage was when the Shaitan sort of thought, well, this will do it. I'll give him this horrible illness that just makes him so disgusting towards the community. And then with that, his faith will shake and tremble and he'll lose his faith. And even that made no difference. So throughout all of this, Prophet Ayyub was still thanking Allah and just asking Allah to keep doing what he was doing and had total faith, total trust in Allah. Welcome back. This is A to Z on Arabic English Radio. I'm talking to you a little bit about trials and tribulations, in particular in the lives of the prophets. I've been talking about Prophet Ayyub, and obviously I've just been saying that no matter what the shaitan did to tear everything away from the prophet, and even in the hardest trial he was given after losing everything and then having a horrible disease, even that didn't shake the faith of the prophet. And then obviously the prophet was compensated and got everything back anyway. And the shaitan was just had humiliated himself even thinking he could do that. So obviously this is just to talk to you a little about how severe some of these trials can be. And just as a reminder, we have lots of different trials that we're put through as believers. We've got, there's different diseases and illnesses. There's things like poverty and humiliation. We can lose our wealth. So these are all the sort of negative things. But remember, we can also be tested with the what we consider the nice things. We can be tested by being given a high rank, high status, by being given power, maybe in our job, by being given a very good job, by being very wealthy, having a wonderful house, having a big family who are all very successful. And so on. And both the negative and the positive things are sent as tests. So we have to be very careful that we can deal with these. And throughout all of this, I remember humility. And also just remind you that obviously we know that person who received the greatest trials is a holy prophet, and he said this of himself, that he said, his own words were that no prophet was tormented to the extent that I was. So just bear this in mind. We must always remember the lessons that we can receive from our prophets as to how to deal with these hardships that are going to come at us, just the way, it says from a hadith, rainwater comes down on us anyway. And so inshallah, you've gained some insights, and you'll tune in to another episode of A to Z on RIB English Radio. And farewell. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Mere denunciation of the evil minds such as the chief crime minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his now replaced war minister, the coward called Yoav Gallant, who together are responsible for the death of at least 45,000 people in Gaza and another 4,000 in Lebanon, is neither implementation of justice nor punishment of the bloodthirsty criminals. The only solution is announcing the death sentence, and it's carrying out without any delay and waste of time and energy in unnecessary trials when the evidence against the war criminals is clear. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote, "Are arrest warrants enough to deter war criminals from ending their slaughter of innocent men, women and children with abandon and bombing of towns to rubble? Has the International Court of Justice ever done justice to the victims and their bereaved families by summoning mass murderers to attend court proceedings? What punishment has the International Criminal Court handed to the killers of humanity in order to prevent others in the future from committing genocide? These questions asked by the world people, aghast at the 14th month's genocide in Gaza and unfolding of the organized massacre in Lebanon by the illegal Zionist entity with the full support of the super criminal, the U.S., and its continued supply of the most lethal weapons, demand decisive answers."
Mere denunciation of the evil minds, such as the chief crime minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his now replaced war minister, the coward called Yoav Gallant, who together are responsible for the death of at least 45,000 people in Gaza and another 4,000 in Lebanon, is neither implementation of justice nor punishment of the bloodthirsty criminals. The only solution is announcing the death sentence and its carrying out without any delay and waste of time and energy in unnecessary trials when the evidence against the war criminals is clear. This is what the leader of the Islamic Revolution said recently in his address to a large gathering in Tehran, telecast nationally and internationally. The ICC arrest warrant is not enough. Netanyahu's death sentence must be ordered, he said amid vociferous chants of God's greatness, Allahu Akbar, interspersed with shouts of death to Israel and death to the U.S., Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, referring to Israel's aggression in the Gaza Strip and Lebanon, pointed out that the bombing of residential buildings is not a victory, but a crime. He added that the cowardly enemy has not won its wars in Gaza and Lebanon, and it will never be able to do so. It is now interesting to see which of the 124 countries that signed the Rome Statute establishing the ICC have the courage to arrest the bloodthirsty Zionist pair if they step foot in any one of them. Super terrorist US is not a signatory to the ICC and is about to trample international laws by hosting the former Zionist war minister, who should be dispatched to the bowels of hell by the justice-loving American people in defense of humanitarian values. Even in occupied Palestine, persons craving for justice and opposed to the war ought to make short work of Netanyahu. If, in the meantime, a drone or a missile fired by any of the factions of the Axis of Resistance does not snuff out his devilish life. Meanwhile, Crescent International wrote, it took the International Criminal Court in The Hague 6 months to issue arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant for war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza. In the six-month period since May 2024, the Zionist war criminals have murdered tens of thousands of other Palestinians, the vast majority of them women and children. They have also displaced 2.3 million Palestinians, the entire population of Gaza, and subjected them to starvation. Food, water, and medicines have been deliberately withheld from the Palestinians to force them out of the tiny enclave. This is meant to implant Zionist squatters in Gaza on a permanent basis. The court unanimously rejected challenges by Israel under Articles 18 and 19 of the Rome Statute. It said in a statement, the court said it found reasonable grounds to believe that Netanyahu and Gallant each bear criminal responsibility for the following crimes as co-perpetrators for committing the acts jointly with others: the war crime of starvation as a method of warfare, and the crimes against humanity of murder, persecution, and other inhuman acts. The official death toll in Gaza has surpassed 45,000 since October 7, 2023, while 103,000 Palestinians have been injured. The actual death toll, according to a study by the British medical journal The Lancet, may be as high as 186,000. Even as these lines are being written, the Zionists are continuing their genocidal campaign in Gaza. So, as far as the Zionist war criminals are concerned, the ICC arrest warrant will not deter them from continuing their genocide of the Palestinians. They slaughtered another 90 Palestinians, many of them children, by bombing the Beit Lahia camp in North Gaza on November 21st. The Dutch news agency ANP, citing the country's foreign minister, Kasper Veldkamp, reported that the Netherlands is prepared to act upon the arrest warrant issued by the ICC against Netanyahu if needed. If the Israeli regime leader comes to Dutch soil, he will be arrested, Veldkamp said in the House of Representatives local outlet Nost reported. The ICC is based in The Hague, the Netherlands. The foreign minister said the Netherlands implements the Rome Statute 100%. The signatories of the Rome Statute and members of the ICC are bound to arrest those against whom warrants are issued. The EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, was equally emphatic, saying that the ICC decision was not political and should be respected and implemented. The French, however, prevaricated. When asked at a news conference if France would arrest Netanyahu, Foreign Ministry spokesperson Christophe Lemoine said it was a legally complicated question. What was legally complicated about it when the ICC ruled that it found reasonable grounds that Netanyahu and Gallant were criminally responsible for mass starvation and murder? The Islamic resistance movement Hamas welcomed the arrest warrants issued by the ICC. Hamas political bureau member Mohsen Naim said in a statement, "It is an important step towards justice and can lead to redress for the victims in general, but it remains limited and symbolic if it is not supported by all means by all countries around the world." It is yet to be seen whether the two Zionist war criminals will be arrested and brought in handcuffs to The Hague.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Phil Giraldi joins us now. Phil, thank you very much for coming on the show. I do want to start with this so-called football, really soccer, riot in Amsterdam. According to Max Blumenthal, the Mossad drove or flew and escorted about 100 Israeli soccer hooligans and protected them as they rampaged through the streets and taunted fans from the other side. Some of them injured people, many of them damaged property. 10 of them were arrested. The Mossad got all of them sprung, and they're all safely home. You wouldn't know any of that from reading the Western media. The Western media referred to it as an anti-Semitic race riot. The New York Times actually apologized for that. Does any of this surprise you, my dear friend?
No, obviously this was something that was a bit of a setup. You might even refer to it as a false flag, since essentially it's to put the blame on someone who was not responsible for what happened and make the other side, in this case, the Israeli provocateurs look like the victims as usual. And I think there's a lot of timing in this. This is a very useful tool for the administration, the incoming administration of Donald Trump, the current administration of Biden. And it's, of course, being orchestrated by Benjamin Netanyahu. The idea is to again make Israel look like the victim and to set the stage for, in Trump's case, pretty much pulling together a cabinet and senior official team that is either already totally sympathetic to Israel and Israel's interests rather than to U.S. interests, or to have people who are leaning in their direction. And I think is what we're seeing. So it has a motive. Israeli media is reporting exactly what you said, that Mossad was involved directing this, and the whole thing has its roots in politics.
Doesn't the Israeli public see through this? Don't they see Netanyahu's trickery, chicanery, lies, and deceptions?
Sure they do. But the fact is that they believe in this case the end justifies the means, which suggests to them that because we want to basically get rid of the Arabs, there's a very strong sentiment in that direction among Israeli citizens. And because they have this view, and it looks like Netanyahu and his chief ministers are moving in the same direction, any trick like this justifies the result.
And as a result of the trick, innocent people in Amsterdam were injured. Property was damaged. The government fell in line. They were either duped or they're part of the chicanery, and nobody paid a price. Oh, there are some people in Amsterdam who lived there who were arrested for having the temerity to resist these hooligans. Moving on, I can only imagine what your thoughts were when the Trump transition announced the appointment of Elise Stefanik as the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. She is probably, and this is going some, the most committed Zionist in the House of Representatives as we speak.
I think that's absolutely correct. She led the witch hunt for anti-Semites at American universities, which have done so much to shut down free speech in the entire university system in this country. This is disgraceful. It's disgusting. The fact that this woman is going to the UN, this is a replay of Nikki Haley, only 10 times worse. I think it's outrageous. I think it's disgusting. I would love to see Congress refuse to approve her appointment, but of course Congress is in bed with her completely. This is a revolting development. Almost as revolting as several other appointments coming up, State Department and Department of Defense.
Right. We'll get to those in a moment. I suppose it is just fanciful to expect that some members of the, I don't know what committee it is, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, would grill her on her overt attacks on the freedom of speech by the manner in which she interrogated the college presidents, two or three of whom, within days of her interrogation, resigned.
Well, I mean, she openly accused these college presidents for being anti-Semites, for allowing students and faculty members at the various universities to peacefully criticize Israeli behavior in Gaza and in a broader way in the Middle East, in places like Lebanon, Syria, and elsewhere. And she called them anti-Semites. And you have other cabinet people that have been promoted that have been playing the anti-Semite card in their various constituencies. So this seems to be a pattern among the people that Trump or whoever is advising him are pulling together.
Before we get into the specifics, we have Stefanik, Huckabee, Rubio, and Hegseth. Do you see a pattern, Phil Giraldi?
Yeah, I mean, they're all committed Zionists. They all basically follow a hardline foreign policy viewpoint where China is focused by, again, many of these prospective candidates for these positions. So I suspect there is a pattern, and whoever is pulling the strings here, maybe one might be looking at things like $100 million donations to the Donald Trump campaign by an Israeli. There are certainly things going on that are making these things happen. And I repeat, what's so outrageous about all this is the fact that we should expect that our senior government officials behave modestly in terms of what their own views are and what they should be looking at, which is the interests of the United States and what should be done to better the status quo of American citizens and of American businesses and of our other interests overseas. And yet these views are being abandoned, and we're getting these people who are sort of in the playground, and somebody's unleashed them, or somebody will unleash them. So I hate to see how this is going to play out.
So, I've known Mike Huckabee and Pete Hegseth for a long time. I've known Mike for about 15 years. He worked at Fox for a number of years, and I've known Pete for about 8 or 9 years also from Fox. But to Huckabee first, Huckabee, who of course is not Jewish, is a Christian nationalist who, like the Speaker of the House of Representatives, if it were up to him, would make some form of Protestantism the official mandatory religion of the United States. Mike is also a super, super committed Zionist. Chris put together a montage of some of Huckabee's statements. This, I love you, Phil, but this will raise your blood pressure. Cut number 11.
Basically, there really is no such thing as, and I have to be careful in saying this, because people will really get upset. There's really no such thing as a Palestinian. There's not Persians. There's such complexity within that. There's really no such thing. That's been a political tool to try to force land away from Israel.
The two-state solution, if we mean two governments holding the same piece of real estate, is irrational and unworkable. If there is a two-state solution, the Palestinian state needs to be outside the boundaries of the nation of Israel. There's plenty of land in the world that we could find a place and say, okay, let's create a Palestinian state. There are certain words I refuse to use. There is no such thing as a West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria. There's no such thing as a settlement. They're communities, they're neighborhoods, they're cities. There's no such thing as an occupation.
Well, the last one is the one that particularly galls me, because many of the retired IDF generals who commanded IDF troops there referred to it as an occupation. The UN refers to it as an occupation. International law refers to it as an occupation. I'll let you take it from there, Phil.
Well, I mean, obviously those statements are revolting and they're inaccurate. He knows nothing about the history of what was referred to as Palestine, which goes back for many, many centuries. And Palestine was a region it was governed out of Syria by the Ottomans, out of Damascus. But the fact is it was referred to as Palestine. And I have maps here in my house that date from the 18th century that show Palestine. So I guess the people living there were not Palestinians. They were some interlopers who had been there for more than 1,000 years, but that wasn't good enough for a guy like Huckabee. The thing that gets me about this a-hole is occasionally on the internet, radio and television, he appears with these ads hustling money for Holocaust survivors. I mean, this is another one of his favorite games about the Holocaust and about these survivors. They must all be 100 and something years old by now. And he's constantly hustling on behalf of Christian and Jewish organizations for money. This guy, there is no low point that this guy will not sink to.
So you know what can be expected from him as ambassador. I guess he hopes to be the conduit between Netanyahu and Trump. But before we get to Netanyahu and Trump, how sick to your stomach were you when you read that the next Secretary of State is likely to be, I don't know if this was a trial balloon, if it was, it didn't go over very well, or a legitimate leak of an actual plan, that the next Secretary of State would be the neocon Zionist, according to Anya Parampil, terrorist because of what he has caused to be funded and done in Latin America, Marco Rubio.
Yeah, Rubio, again, is about as low as you're going to get. This is a guy who is whose policies are based on things like family history, that he comes from Cuba, and now he wants to get rid of the Cuban government and will do whatever he can to do that, including going after supporters of Cuba or people who feel Cuba should be treated like any other country, like Venezuela. So he's been behind efforts to support what we would consider terrorist groups in those countries to basically destabilize them and bring about the solution that he wants. We need that as a Secretary of State. And if you've ever heard him speak, yeah, he can hardly put two sentences together. It's just so awful. I had thought that Donald Trump would have learned something from his first tour, basically that he should have been looking for people who were not ideologues, but people who had good common sense and enough experience to be able to work in the context of these very complicated bureaucracies that they're being placed at the top of. But apparently he doesn't seem to have learned that.
Before we get to Pete Hegseth, I want to play you a clip from the finance minister of the Israeli government, who proclaimed himself the governor general of the West Bank. Of course, he doesn't call it the West Bank. But here he's saying, basically, since Trump has now been elected, now's the time to make this annexation legal. Cut number 9, Chris.
I have instructed the Settlement Division in the Ministry of Defense and the Civil Administration to begin professional and comprehensive work to prepare the necessary infrastructure for applying sovereignty. In his first term, President Trump led dramatic steps, including affirming the legality and legitimacy of settlements in Judea and Samaria. Alongside this, there were the Abraham Accords, peace for peace. Those accords, a set of agreements facilitated by Trump's first administration, saw Israel normalize relations with four Arab nations. We were on the verge of applying sovereignty over the settlements in Judea and Samaria, and now the time has come to do so.
Prime Minister Netanyahu, apparently not on tape, but to a newspaper reporter, according to Haaretz, endorsed what Finance Minister Smotrich just said. And I didn't know this, Phil, Netanyahu's one of his three corruption trials is resuming the first week in December with his, apparently, we don't have this here, compelled testimony. All of this at the time that Smotrich wants to use the machinery of government to steal this land. He has the blessing of the new U.S. ambassador, which probably means he has the blessing of the new U.S. president.
I would think that's a given. And I think he has the blessing of Joe Biden. There is nothing that Israel cannot do that anyone at the top of our government will say boo about. They promised 30 days ago that if Israel continued to starve the Palestinians, the United States would take action to limit the weapons that are being provided and the money. And now what's happened? They've decided that, no, they're not going to bother to do that. That's Joe Biden. So this was, this for the Americans like us, who would like to see peace and good relations with the rest of the world instead of 800 bases overseas and a $1 trillion defense budget, are stuck with an imperial agenda that is making us hated as a nation throughout the world. This is a disgrace, and it comes squarely onto the shoulders of people like Donald Trump, Joe Biden, and all the other people who are within the government enabling this process. I think it's time for the people to rise up. And, we've got to start saying this is no longer acceptable.
You and I have libertarian and progressive friends who voted for Trump because they believed he'd be an anti-war candidate. Right. If you look at these names, Stefanik Huckabee, Rubio, Hegseth, we haven't even gotten to Hegseth yet. It's clear that these are all pro-war people. They are uber Zionists. They want to give Netanyahu whatever he wants. Here is Pete Hegseth on the show that he hosted, which, footnote, I once hosted a long time ago, called Fox and Friends. At the very end of this clip, which is a little under a minute, he calls for bombing cultural sites in Tehran. Chris, cut number 12.
Sometimes you have moments, Stephen. I happen to believe that we can't kick the can down the road any longer in trying to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear bomb. They used the killing of Soleimani as an excuse to say, we're scrapping the Iran deal. We all know they were scrapping it anyway. So what better time than now to say, we're starting the clock. You've got a week. You've got X amount of time before we start taking out your energy production facilities. We take out key infrastructure. We take out your missile sites. We take out nuclear development.
That is
we
not
take
a
out
popular
port
idea.
Capabilities. Or, you know what, take out a Quds headquarters while you're at it, if you want. I understand that's not a popular idea. But if we're going to fight to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear bomb, this regime, then we need to rewrite the rules that are advantageous to us. I don't want to hit cultural sites on purpose, but if you're using one to harbor your most dangerous weapons, then that should be on the target list.
Rewrite the rules so they favor us. Gee, I wonder what Vladimir Putin would do if the United States purported to bomb Tehran, Secretary Hegseth. What do you think, Phil?
Well, I think Vladimir Putin would actually act in terms of his own national interests and might feel that that is a non-productive direction to be going in. I would point out that this Hegseth is crazier even than he just came across as. I've been informed by a good friend who's followed his career rather closely, that he's not only a rather extremist Christian in many respects, he's also what was referred to as a third temple person. Now, these are the Christians who basically want to destroy the Muslim Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem and replace it with a third Jewish temple. And this, of course, would, in their minds, would lead to the Armageddon that would lead to the end of the world, and we would all either go up to heaven or somewhere else. So this is how crazy these people are. And to be talking about these people as potential secretaries of defense with all those weapons and all those tools at their fingertips, this is obscene. This is so bad. You know, who could imagine that a guy like this would be considered for Secretary of Defense?
This is Pete Hegseth talking about women in combat. Number 13, Chris.
I think a huge one is women in combat and quotas. I think the way they pushed that under Obama in a way that had nothing, zero to do with efficacy, zero to do with lethality and capability.
You don't like women in combat?
No.
Why not?
I love women service members who contribute amazingly because everything about men and women serving together makes the situation more complicated and complication in combat means casualties are worse.
Is there a basis for that, or is this just his cultural conservatism?
Well, I think there's a certain basis for it. And that women, obviously, in certain combat roles have certain physical liabilities like upper body strength and things like that. But to make an across-the-board condemnation of this, I think the experiment of women in many Department of Defense roles has been very positive.
What do you think is the big picture here with Donald Trump appointing these neocons, warmongers and Zionists to these sensitive positions? I don't know if the Rubio thing is going to happen or not, but Stefanik, Huckabee, and Hegseth have formally been announced. What do you think is Trump's game here? Did he materially mislead the American public during the campaign? Did we misread him? Is there something going on here that we don't know about? Is he a secret neocon who really likes war because he likes to kill people like he killed General Soleimani, who was on a peace mission?
Well, he certainly believes he has the license to kill, just as Mr. Netanyahu does. And that's a very dangerous thing. The president does not have a license to kill. But, you know, this is all scary stuff. You know what really scares me is the fact that we are enabling someone who is plausibly insane in the form of Netanyahu to do whatever he needs to get away with his own personal needs and also for the advancement of Israel as the sole major military power in the Mideast region. And I am very afraid that this clown, this idiot, would use nuclear weapons if he felt it was a good idea on Iran, on Syria, on Lebanon. And we'd get people like these gentlemen that we're just talking about who would endorse it, would say, oh, it's perfectly all right. They were being threatened by an Iran that has the capability of building its own nuclear weapons. We would hear that kind of thing. And that's where when my head explodes.
Who will have the upper hand, Trump or Netanyahu? Or stated differently, is there a reason for Netanyahu's bounce in his step? Does he now believe he'll get whatever he wants from the U.S. government under Donald Trump?
Well, he obviously believes that because people are telling him that. And I would suspect that those are the people in the Israel lobby in the United States, and as well as that people like Miriam Eggleston, who gave him $100 million to basically allow her country, Israel, to take over all of historic Palestine. So we have all these kind of influences working on Trump, who admittedly is not a very well-educated or bright man. He's driven by ego. He's driven by compulsions. And this makes him happy to think that he's so loved by all these sorts of people.
He once proclaimed himself, I think you wrote about this in your column at the UNS Review, and this might actually be true, that he's the most popular politician in Israel.
Yeah. He said he could get elected to high office in Israel instantly because he's so popular.
I guess he forgot that he's not Jewish and therefore he's not not eligible for the office.
Well, I did say he's not intelligent.
Thank you, Phil. Always a pleasure. I appreciate you moving your usual time to accommodate my needs. No matter what we talk about, it's a pleasure to hear you and be able to pick your brain. All the best, my dear friend.
Okay, well, have a good debate today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد عودتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host, Mahdi, and we're joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother Mahdi. And assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of this program. Thank you for having me, brother Mahdi.
Thank you for accepting our invitation, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, this program consists of several parts, all pertaining to the Holy Quran. At first, we are talking about a famous Quran reciter, and then we are going to listen to a recitation by that famous reciter. After it, Brother Muhammad is going to analyze that recitation, and then beside all these parts, we are going to have some other Quranic parts, which are going to be presented to you throughout the program. So don't go away. On August 12, 2010, Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, at a Quranic meeting said, "If we do not learn from the Holy Quran, we would not be strongly advised to recite it. We should pay attention that the goal is not simply to create and disperse vocal waves in the air. It is not the goal. And the goal is not to enjoy the Holy Quran like the way we enjoy a poem which is recited by a person in a good voice and in a rhythmic way. The goal is not to enjoy the Holy Quran this way. All these prerequisites, that is to say, reciting the Holy Quran and what promotes this recitation in society, which is having a good voice, are for the sake of understanding the Quranic concepts. Good voice is only one of the elements which promotes recitation in the society and which attracts hearts towards it." Today we are going to listen to a recitation by Sheikh Muhammad Ewaz. He was an Egyptian reciter who was born in the rural area of Damyat Governorate in 1933. At the age of 5, he lost his father, who was very pious and a reciter of the Holy Quran. Then his uncle adopted him and helped him learn the recitation of the Noble Quran. So when he turned 7, he performed his first recitation before people of the village. Then he learned tajweed and recitation rulings and memorized the Noble Quran. When he was a teenager, he took part in a provincial Quran competition for the first time, and he managed to rank first in the competition. He entered Egyptian Quran Radio in 1977. He traveled to many countries, including Thailand, Netherlands, Russia, and United Arab Emirates. He passed away in 2002. May Allah bless his soul. Now it's time to listen to the recitation of Surah Ar-Rum, verses 20 to 22, recited by Sheikh Muhammad Ayvaz, preceded by its English translation. Let's enjoy it.
In the name of Allah, the absolutely merciful, the especially merciful. And among his signs is that he created you from dust, and then, behold, you are human beings scattered. And among his signs is that he created for you from among yourselves mates, that you may find repose in them, and he has put between you affection and mercy. Verily in that are indeed signs for a people who reflect. And among his signs is the creation of the heavens and the earth, and the difference of your languages and complexions. Verily in that are indeed signs for people of sound knowledge.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ومن آياته أن خلقكم ثم إذا أنتم بشر تنتشرون ومن آيات
Dear audience, you're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, and what you just listened to was recitation of Surah Ar-Rum, verses 20 to 22, recited by Sheikh Muhammad Ival. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, this was a very beautiful recitation. And, this reciter has a very clear voice.
Yes.
He has a very special voice. And, it's very relaxed. And at the same time, it's very audible and clear and loud. And these are very beautiful verses. It's about the creation of the human being and how Allah made mates from the human beings themselves and how they take comfort in them and how He made affection and mercy between them. These are very beautiful verses. And Sheikh Iwald, he recited these verses very beautifully because, we have a narration from the Holy Prophet. The Prophet says, حَسِّنُوا الْقُرْآنَ بِأَصْوَاتِكُمْ فَإِنَّ صَوْتَ الْحَسَنْ يَزِيدُ الْقُرْآنَ حَسَنًا. It means, recite the Qur'an with a beautiful voice, or make your recitation of the Qur'an beautiful with your voices. Make the Qur'an beautiful with your voices, because a beautiful voice and melody increases the beauty of the Qur'an. Okay, let's go over the rules of tajweed.
Good idea.
What's interesting about verse 20 and 21 is that there's a lot of rules of nun sakina. Wa min ayati, we have ilham.
Manifestation.
An khalaqakum, another ilham.
Yes.
The nun is pronounced clearly, completely. Min turab, we have ikhfa. Antum,
again ikhfa.
Another ikhfa. Antum bashar. This is not the rule of nun sakina, but it's a rule of mim sakina, which is similar to iqlab.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see that these ikhfas and nun sakinas, they increase they make the rhythm more beautiful.
Yes.
They improve the rhythm of the verse. وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ أَنْ خَلَقَكُمْ مِنْ تُرَابٍ ثُمَّ إِذَا أَنْتُمْ. See, these are all ghunnas. And it makes it very beautiful. And Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq al-Minshawi, he has recited these verses so beautifully.
Yes.
And you just have to listen to it many times, over and over. وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ أَنْ خَلَقَ لَكُمْ. And one thing is that the مَدُّ الْمُنْفَصِلِ are lengthened to four vowel counts. وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ أَنْ خَلَقَكُمْ. And لِتَسْكُنُوا, the scene was pronounced with the correct timing. The pause that you have to make on the letters. Scene has the highest timing, the longest timing, actually.
Because it is a weak fricative.
It's a weak fricative. It's a letter of rahawa. Or, for example, السِنَتِكُمْ, the scene was pronounced again with the correct timing. The maqams that were used in this recitation were Hijaz. The beginning was Hijaz. It was very beautiful. Hijaz is a very strange maqam. Abdul Basit, he uses this maqam a lot. And it's very beautiful.
Yeah, it's impressive, I think.
Yes, it's, you know, it's just, it's like a different world. Whenever you listen to Hijaz, it's like it's from another world. Yes, you know, Hijaz has a kind of rhythm because, you know, originally the melody and the tune of Hijaz was used for the camels in Hijaz. They used to recite certain poems using this maqam, and the camels, they would walk. They would start walking and moving. And because of the rhythm that it has. And it reminds you of the desert of Arabia, of Hijaz. And usually this maqam is used for talking about whenever the verse is about the signs of Allah. These are all signs of Allah. Excellent. Hijaz is an excellent maqam for conveying the meaning whenever it's about the signs of Allah. وَمِنْ آيَاتِ, of His signs is that He created you from dust. And of His signs is that He created you for you mates from your own selves. Among His signs is the creation of the heavens and the earth. And at the end, at the end, he says, the verse says, there are indeed signs in that for those who know. And he recites this part of the verse in Maqam Nahawand as a conclusion.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio, for staying with us. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until next program, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye.
سبحان يا خالق الإنسان نورنا بالقرآن بمصحف الإيمان ندعوك نرجوك يا مالك التكوين ندعوك نرجوك يا مالك التكوين املأ قلبي قرآن اشرح صدري قرآن املأ قلبي قرآن اشرح صدري قرآن.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top stories. An Israel-Lebanon ceasefire deal that took effect on Wednesday is largely holding, but there are reports of sporadic violations by the Tel Aviv regime. The top commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps congratulates the Hezbollah chief for the resistance movement's victory over the Israeli regime. And And Israel presses ahead with its genocidal campaign in Gaza, despite a UN warning that hunger is reaching critical levels in the blockaded strip. Hello and welcome. Let's go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. A ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel is now in its second day and largely holding, yet there are reports of some violations of the deal by the Tel Aviv regime. According to